Welcome to The Liberated Life, the podcast for women who are done pretending that they have it all figured out and are ready to live with more freedom, clarity, and courage. I'm Lucy Maeve, your guide on a journey through the unspoken parts of healing, desire, and self-discovery. This is a place to be seen, heard, and held, where we embrace all the complexities and contradictions of being fully alive. No masks, no shortcuts, just the real work and real liberation. Hello, my darlings. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited to share this episode with you. I've had such a joy recording it. I have my incredible friend Annette on the podcast today. Annette is a medicine woman, artist, and founder of Wild Nettle, and she is devoted to unlocking and exploring the wisdom that resides within our bodies and the natural world. She is an absolute matriarch. Despite being quite a few years younger than me, I look up to Annette in so many ways because she holds such deep wisdom. And I really encourage you to soak this episode up. It is deep and earthy, and so many different threads come through. We're talking about sexuality, about birth, about rites of passage, about womanhood, about matriarchal tribes. It's a deep and juicy one. And I just really hope that you glean so much wisdom from this, because it was such a joy to record, and because everything that Annette stands for and her deep devotion to being in connection with the earth is really something that I am increasingly leaning into. And my time living in Cape Town really taught me the importance of our connection with nature and the earth. And Annette was such a pillar and an anchor for me in that journey. I will mention that there is a little bit of talk about C-sections and also some talk about sexuality. So if any of that stuff feels in any way triggering for you, then perhaps skip this episode over, or once we start talking about those pieces, just press pause. I just thought I'd let you know in case any of that is particularly ripe for you in this season of your life and you'd prefer not to hear it. So, my sweet loves, sending you so much love. Enjoy the episode. Grab a cup of tea. Do it slowly. Do it slowly. Don't listen to this one on the tube. Give yourself the joy and the gift of presence. Okay, my darlings, we are back, and I'm so excited for today because Annette is one of my dear, dear friends and is so unbelievably wise and has so much magic to share. And I just am so excited for this conversation. So my first question for you, my love, is when I asked you about your current edge in life, you talked about that you're learning the art of staying, which I kind of like. I laughed when I saw it because we have this in common, but I wondered what that means to you.
It's funny because before we got on this call, we were just talking about the medicine of iboga and roots and bark. And what keeps coming through to me as somebody who really looks to nature as my God or ultimate guide, I am currently really investing in my root system and my base, you could even say. If I look at it from a body chakra point, I am really paying attention to my foundation, to my physical strength, my bones. For so much of my life, I was really focused on like the fruits and the flowers and the visibility and being seen. And the roots were kind of boring. It wasn't something I really paid attention to. I liked the ease to fly around the world and, be that type of a person. And I feel as I'm maturing, I'm recognizing that nothing truly grows well, or at least sustainably, unless there's a solid root system.
What is your root system? Like, what does a root system mean to you?
It's actually getting to know what is in my environment. It's locally growing food, or at least buying food that is locally grown. It's getting to know my neighbors. It's choosing to stay in one place long enough that I can attract a partner, you know, and a steady relationship. It's going to the gym 3 times a week, seeing the same people, and being consistent with my physical practice. It's going to bed early and choosing not to go on this incredible freediving trip that was just offered to me. Instead, saving that money and really getting some, yeah, investments going and feeling secure in my own, yeah, finances, which sometimes looks like conservation and not, you know, just going out and doing that thing because I'm afraid in some way that I'm going to miss out. Yeah, it's really like adulting.
As you're talking, I'm like, first of all, who is this woman? But simultaneously, like, oh my God, I feel you so deeply in the words that you said around like nothing grows sustainably or well without a strong root system. And actually how much our society reveres the flowers and not the roots.
Yeah, it's like a constant summer. And it is so not me. Like, I'm a 3-6 in human design. I have a 3-3, which means my nature is to experiment. It is to change. It is to go. And of course, that will always be part of who I am. But if I'm honest with myself right now, there is such an exhale to saying no, to actually going, I'm going to choose something gentler. Part of this base root work that I'm doing on my lower sort of foundation is no new damage is the mantra. And it's so interesting to live from that place right now where I'm like, will this choice potentially create new damage? And I realized last year, I dove into things really, I'm an Aries. So I just say, yes, I will like go all in. And it created damage that I now have to clean up. And I'm just kind of in this little cocoon of like, I am restoring the safety for my root, for my little girl, for my nervous system, so that I can truly operate from a really grounded nervous system and place. And I think we forget how deeply traumatized and like chaotic our nervous systems actually are in our culture, and what it takes to really restore that.
This links so much to what you were just sharing about like leaning into nature as your teacher. So I was actually talking to Thomas about this yesterday, and it mirrors in many ways your experience, because I know that you were away a lot last winter. Like you went from South Africa into European summer to a certain degree. So I am in this experience now of not having had a winter for quite a long time, like a seasonal winter, because we left South Africa in March and came straight into quite an early summer in the UK. And I've been thinking a lot about actually the impact of missing fundamental seasonal changes in our environment and the impact of that on our capacity to have roots, because if we don't have the natural cyclical nature of like, I'm going into winter now in the season, so therefore I'm like maybe hunkering down a little bit more, being more stable, I guess. And I'm feeling this inner yearning right now that I'm like, I really need a winter. Like I feel like I've been I feel like I've been out until like 4 a.m. and I'm like, I really need to go to sleep now. And I wonder, in a way, you had that last European summer that you left the winter and missed a winter. And actually, is that kind of damaging to us that we're not living in one environment with the cyclical nature of the seasons?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And something I have done, gosh, since I was 17, I would fly out of London to come to Cape Town to be with my family for the summer, and then obviously do the festival circuit in Europe over our winter each year. Obviously having incredible experiences, meeting new people. However, this year it suddenly struck me that, yes, on the outside I am gaining maybe influence and followers and experiences. And again, the fruits and the flowers are really glamorous. But the maturity of my own offerings and my own integrity to my work, I could feel was lacking. There's an element of going inward to actually truly harness our gifts, our real ripeness. And I kind of see it like it's the world we live in. Yes, we have these glamorous fruits, like we are genetically modifying fruit that it looks bright and it grows bigger, but the mineral density of that fruit is so lacking. And so we are very superficially minded. And of course, then our human nature is to also like perpetuate that. And so, yeah, I follow the wisdom of weeds and wild plants. And if I look to them as guides and look to this need for winter and what it does, and a maturing of like literally our being and our consciousness in a culture right now that is so deeply immature.
As you were talking about that, like the maturing of your work and the depth of your work, and this does, I notice in myself, similar to what you just shared, like because we live in such a fast-paced environment, and I notice it even more living in Europe, like the desire to always be shiny and always have something out, but actually that means there isn't very much space for the depth of work. And when I think about you and what I know of you, both personally and in your work, is you hold such deep wisdom. Like you studied matriarchal tribes for a long time. And first of all, I guess, like, what was it that initially called you to doing that depth of work? Because there's a lot talked in the Instagram realms and the healing worlds about like the mother wound, and but it's all pretty superficial. And you went on such a deep dive around that. And what was it that drew you to do that?
Yeah, thank you for that reflection. It really is ultimately embodied. I think that's the key. You feel that when somebody's lived through what they teach. And I've always only facilitated something that I have personally been through and experienced and then integrated myself. And I guess it has been, yeah, a decade almost more of searching to find my own body first and foremost. It wasn't out of choice. I didn't want to become a coach because it was, you know, trending. I was desperate. Like I was really lost. I was 21. I was working in nightclubs in London, you know, taking drugs, drinking, studying business and law, trying to live up to this expectation of my family and my own perfection, like a student at King's, you know, really on this treadmill until my body shut down. And there was this sudden realization that, wow, I'm not actually present to my life. I'm just going. And the illness, which I always say, like the body will be the final alarm system, because especially if you have a strong mind, you can just will yourself, you know, through the signals. And I decided to stop my law degree. I finished my BCSC in business, and I decided to take a year to essentially find myself or figure out who I am. I stopped drinking, I studied yoga and Reiki, and went on this kind of search for spirit, you could say, realizing that I had no connection to nature or to what it means to be a woman. I think that was the biggest one, and that's why my later study of matriarchal tribes, and particularly rites of passage, became really important, because I felt like there was no one had really guided me into what it means to be a woman if I wasn't just now going to be this lawyer or this model or this actress. Like, who am I and what is my reason for being, you know?
Yeah, because so much of what we're conditioned to believe is womanhood is actually in many ways a representation of the maiden.
Yes, and the patriarchal construct where we are, you know, made to match our men and be as hardworking and be independent and kind of play their game. And of course, we can do it because women can do anything, but I don't want to play your game. I want to find my own way that is actually in harmony with my body, with my cyclical nature, with nature. You know, when I started then going down this like eco-feminist pathway, realizing that my own abuse of my body, which included, you know, drugs, anorexia, sexual violation, like all these things that I was experiencing was the same thing I was seeing outside in the world. The extraction of the minerals, the pollution, the raping and pillaging of land. And I suddenly realized, like, we're trying so desperately to save the world out there, and yet my very reality is an experience of harm, where I too am harming myself. And so the most important first thing is to get really fucking real with where I am not being kind and caring to my own body. Yeah.
Which is, like, in all honesty, like the deepest and most painful work we can ever do, right? And it's always this, like, how our outer world is such a reflection of our inner, like the inner war that goes on internally. And how deeply entrenched that is for so many. I think it exists for men as well, but like my experience in a female body is just, even when it's very quiet and the voice of like deep criticism has probably softened for me a little bit over the years, but I still have this like constant hum of not enoughness and of like holding back from full nourishment. Like, I had a really interesting experience in a session with a friend the other day. I'm like a practice client for her, and we were talking about my capacity to receive love and like capacity to actually receive nourishment from love. And we were going round and round talking about it, and like obviously being in a relationship with a partner who is deeply loving and devoted to me in many ways has been so triggering. And I'd started to lose quite a lot of weight. And I was like, why am I losing weight? I don't understand. Like, I feel like I'm eating the same amount. And it came up in this session with her that I was like, oh my goodness, this, like, it's almost as if my capacity to receive and actually look after my body is limited to a certain amount. So it's like, okay, I'm receiving this love from partnership now. So some very subtle subconscious thing is now like, but now don't nourish yourself fully with food. Because yeah, like what would it mean to be like a fully nourished woman, both like physically and emotionally and spiritually? Like that's a woman of vibrancy. And I think for so many of us, that's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. Wow. I have truth bumps as you're speaking. It is so real. And as you said, it's painful. I think when we actually start doing the work of coming into our bodies to feel the reality of what we've lived through, it's like 3,000 years of harm and malnourishment and abuse and also servitude, like complete service despite ourselves to family or the system. And so to decide that actually I am going to choose to truly nourish myself deeply is a radical act for women in a culture that still is promoting this kind of, you know, plastic and contained and perfect image. And it comes with so much grief, because as you say, am I worthy if I'm not this thing? Like, what is my inherent worth? And how do I truly feed that? And I think it's not limited to women. I just recognize that as, you know, birthers of the earth, it is imperative that we take responsibility for this nourishment so that these next generation of men and women come in from a whole holy place.
And when you were doing your work around the matriarchal tribes and rites of passage, if you compare some of what you learned to the world that we live in now, what were the like most stark differences?
So it was a 3-year program, and it was truly mind-boggling. Dr. Heide Gottenberg, who runs this academy in Germany, has been for 10 years studying the last remaining matriarchal tribes around the world, which actually still exist. And it's all very like empirical, archaeological, academic knowledge of systems and places that operate completely outside of a patriarchal structure. And first and foremost, the groundbreaking reality is that the way that we live is not the only way, and that there are actual spaces with, you know, hundreds and sometimes thousands of people that are living in a world where there is no such thing as rape. Like, they don't even understand what the concept is because they would never harm a woman. There's no such thing as, you know, hierarchy. There's an equality that is embedded into the way that they live. There is no harm of nature because nature is where they receive all their nourishment. And ultimately, the greatest kind of things that I learned were particularly around the economy. Mm. So what was so interesting is if you look at how our economy moves money, our system moves money through war. Literally right now, we are funding wars through our investments. Mm. The greatest earner is, you know, doing arms, and we kill people literally to extract labor from them, or we exploit the environment to make money. And so there's this literal energy of war to create funds. Interestingly, in a matriarchal tribe, the way money would move around a community or a tribe is that each person would come to the marketplace and they would, you know, sell their offerings, you know, whether it's a service or a product. And obviously some people would do well and others wouldn't. But whoever did the best that year and accumulated the most wealth, they would not go and hoard it for themselves. They would use that money to then create a festival, and that money would then be distributed through to everybody through celebration. So money always moved through celebration. Like every month there was a different ritual. There were rites of passage festivals for the initiation of women. It was far more important to let money be a tool to secure greater connection amongst the people than to hoard it as protection and preservation. Mm. And it's so fascinating because it kind of gets to the core of what's wrong with our world. We have become so disconnected and separated that we hoard wealth because we don't have human connection, because we would prefer to put up, you know, we have to put up barriers and greater walls and fences and more security to protect the wealth that we've made from the neighbors that we don't speak to or the people that we don't care about on the streets that may steal from us. So there's this total kind of flip in the way that we literally operate. And it's obviously now like at extreme levels.
It's also like when you were just talking then about the fences and the security and obviously that definitely exists in the UK to a different degree to how it exists in South Africa, but there's definitely a sense of like, we need to pull everything inwards. Like it needs to just be for us. And I was talking to my mum about this the other day, because there are a few people on their road that are suddenly like, we need security on the road. And this is in the home counties in England. Like it's fine. There is no need for security. But this real sense of like, we must protect ourselves. And it's interesting because a lot of these people are like inherently very wealthy. Like they have a lot of money in their bank account. And simultaneously, the mentality to be in a space of like, I must protect, is an energy of lack. So it was like what you were sharing about money spreading through celebration versus through war. It's like we're really talking about abundance versus scarcity and lack. And what would happen if we moved into a space of like, it's almost like a big exhale of safety.
Totally. And again, the greatest teacher of that abundance is nature. Mm. And due to our disconnection from nature, we don't trust that we have enough. Nature is constantly giving. She's this unconditional provider of all the nutrients, of all the nourishment, of all the, you know, everything we have comes from her. There's this generosity, but we don't see that. We just take and we just buy. And if you're not connected to how things grow or how things move in the natural world, of course you're going to be fed this mind virus of scarcity, you know, which does come in a lot of different forms. Even the media feeds us scarcity. The news, like these things are programmed to have you live in insecurity so that you can be part of the machine and just keep it grinding on. It's not a mistake that this is happening. It's designed this way. And I think it's, really takes a lot to come to terms with what it means to have, to be truly satiated. I myself am going through that, like constantly, you know, growing up with a lot of privilege, wanting to be successful, asking myself, what truly is it that I'm craving and what do I really need? And what actually makes me feel joy and full and abundant? Because oftentimes it's not an extra, I don't know how much K in my investment. It's the friendships, the reliability of the people around me, the consistency of knowing that I'm showing up to something that is, you know, sustainable and helping people and that they are valuing.
And it feels to me like, I actually had a conversation with Thomas about this yesterday, that a lot of the stuff around money and about like, I will feel safe when I have X amount of money, it comes from a place of I can't rely on anyone for me. So it's like, if I have so much money, then I can pay someone to do things for me. So if I need support, I can pay for it. If I need this, I can pay for it. Versus like, I'm surrounded by a wonderful community that I really nourish and I value and I am committed and devoted to. Of course, I'm always supported. Like, whereas when our only currency of love is money, of course, that's going to be the thing that we're constantly chasing. And I battle this so much, and it's come up for me so much since I've been back in the UK, because I think the UK has a lot of money stuff flying around, especially central London. And really recognizing like true abundance for me, and it's reflected so much for me when I'm in South Africa, is like a real sense of community and like a belonging and a sense of home within groups of people, not around having a huge house and a Tesla and loads of money in your bank account.
It's ultimately exactly that. What are we valuing really? And as like two women who were so independently minded, I mean, I left home at 17, we've always bonded over this sense of how difficult it is to actually ask for help or to reach out when we're feeling low. I mean, I still to this day, like I said to you, let's just start a thing where we tell each other, okay, do you have 7 minutes? Because to in my hour of need, I have programmed myself to go, you know, I can figure it out. Like I struggle, and it's humility actually to recognize that it's an illusion to think that I can do this alone. Mm. And what a gift it is for me even to receive an ask from a friend, to know that that's how we gain intimacy. That's how we trust each other, by being vulnerable, by saying like, hey, I'm struggling with this, or can you help me market my thing? Or why don't we just fucking collaborate, ladies? Like my whole thing right now, which is why I've been so quiet in my work, is that I have no interest in selling some personal perfect service. I know deeply that the next iteration of what I do is in collaboration with the people in my life. Mm. It's going to be something that we all feed into and feed from. And of course that takes time to develop trust, to figure out what that is, but I'm really committed to that going forward.
Mm. It reminds me also of something that one of my friends in Cape Town once said to me about, it wasn't a particularly pokey about my work, but just about the industry in general, that we're in a world now where a lot of people are going to therapy and going to coaches and which is a wonderful thing. And simultaneously, I think sometimes it can break intimacy within our communities, because it's like, I have these safe spaces that I can go to. So I'll just go to my therapist or my coach to say all this stuff, versus actually being vulnerable with the people where there's more on the line. Like, it's way easier for me to go to a women's circle with a load of strangers and be like, I'm really struggling, it's really hard, versus calling up someone that knows me and saying, I'm really struggling and it's really hard.
Totally. Yeah, it's a wild time. Wow. I think it had its importance, and gosh, we've all enjoyed and benefited, and I certainly wouldn't be who I am without all that I've learned within this industry. And it's undoubtedly in a state of evolution, you could say.
Yeah.
I think everybody's feeling that. Like, how does it become more community-minded?
I want to ask you a little bit about rites of passage, because you were mentioning earlier that a big part of the work you were doing was around rites of passage. And it's something that I often think about when I go into my inner child spirals of like, I have become a 5-year-old girl and I am now freaking out about this thing. And I sometimes wonder, I'm like, if I had had like a really defined rite of passage from childhood of like, okay, you've been this way as a child and that's fine, but now you're a woman and a woman behaves in this way now, so we leave those things in the past because you're now a woman. I'm like, I wonder whether something would have actually fundamentally changed rather than this weird experience of going from childhood and suddenly being an adult, but still having the brain of a child and never having been told what it actually means to be a woman in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. I guess what I started to study and really uncover in my thesis was, we ultimately live our lives through meaning and storytelling, and this is what makes, you know, the world kind of go around. And in matriarchal tribes, the most important story or festival or celebration was the initiation of young girls into womanhood. And what that ultimately meant is, when you got your period, you were revered by the entire community as the vessel in which the ancestors or the next kind of generation of humans would come through. And so you were told and shown that your body is such an important temple. And so this respect and reverence for your menstruation, for your blood, for your body, for your sexuality was just honored. Versus in our culture, where you get your period, you shove a tampon up, you keep quiet about it, you feel immense shame and disgust. What that ultimately does is create the first trauma to a woman, where we sever ourselves from our root. We like try to kind of pretend that this isn't happening. And what that then creates is a disassociation, which is why then you go into a sexual relationship and you wonder why it felt really awkward or, you know, possibly even damaging. Mm-hmm. And then what I see as a doula at the next rite, which is as a mother, there is this complete lack of trust in your own body to birth a baby, because you literally do not feel your own vagina or your own womb. It's like I'm looking outside to an expert gynecologist or doctor or somebody to tell me how to birth this child, because I've had no real moment of deeply realizing what this body and vessel is made for. And yeah, interestingly, what started to happen is these initiation rites were replaced by marriage rites. And what that the sort of original use was for the sort of male patriarchs to buy the female's children into their lineage, so into their name. And look, this is not to say that, you know, marriage is now just a way to buy people. I do still, you know, hope to get married one day. It's just interesting to know the roots of these, you know, cultural celebrations and what their meaning is and how they shape the way the world works. Because now women don't have an initiation rite. Instead, they wait desperately to be chosen. So they do everything they can to become the perfect bride or the perfect girl, perfect woman, to finally have like somebody, you know, purchase them over into their family, and then wonder why there's such high divorce rates, or they feel totally disassociated during their birth process, or feel, you know, immensely depressed, because there is this level of like meaning that we've kind of lost and need to really look at.
Well, because really, like, I was thinking about it when you were talking about weddings and marriage and that being the rite of passage that has taken over from actually coming into womanhood at the start of bleed. I was wondering, I was like, it almost keeps women in the girl state, because that process of like being given away, maybe it was meant to be like, okay, you're now a woman because we're giving away to a husband. I don't feel like it feels that way. I think it's like, you're a little girl that I'm going to walk down, and now you're going to be this other man's little girl. Like, there's no sense of sovereignty in any of this. It's just like, you're an item that can be passed between men, but there's no... That was really, when you were talking about like this desperation to be chosen, like that was so my experience for such a long time. And having been single for 99.19% of my life, I had spent the whole of my 20s and my teenage years, to be honest, being like, one day I'll be chosen. Like, I'll be chosen and then I'll feel enough. I'll be chosen and then I'll feel enough. And granted, I am now in a relationship, but as you were talking about it, I don't have that experience anymore. I don't think I even had that experience before I met Thomas. There wasn't this like, I need to desperately be chosen, because of the tight, I guess a lot of the work that I've been doing on myself in a way has created a rite of passage into womanhood. And I think that's really what a lot of personal work is now doing, is like the maturation process that we missed in our teenage years. But that stands you in self and stands you in a sense of sovereignty. That's like, okay, it's wonderful to be in a relationship with someone, but my worth doesn't rely on that. My safety doesn't rely on that.
Yeah, completely. It's, I really see that there is a place where there are sovereign brides and there is a marriage that is whole. And, you know, we've done the work to feel equal and to choose it from that consciousness. I think it's just important to understand, yeah, what it has bred in women. And for us to really ask those questions, as you say, like, how is this going to give me any more value than is inherently within me? And for sure, there is a huge maiden crisis. We're so terrified to mature along the path of womanhood, because our value is in being fertile and available as young, beautiful woman. I mean, you see that in every cosmetic thing. Everything is anti-aging. Everybody's doing Botox. There's a desperation to stay youthful, which is therefore to stay, you know, available and stay valuable to a society that just sees you as the prize in which to buy and to then make babies out of. And what that's doing is we are losing the generations of grandmothers, which is the ultimate elder, the crone. You know, in all tribes, you'd have your chiefs who would lead, but they would be always in service to the council of grandmothers. Those were the ones who would help to guide the chiefs to make their decisions. And we have no grandmothers present. We do not have the elder wisdom of a woman who has birthed the people that are leading her. And so I see that like void in our culture as one of the greatest reasons that we're so lost. And it's because women are desperately trying to avoid that maturity. And interestingly, it's the same for men. Like men also have rites of passage. And it's even more of a crisis for men because at least for women, our rites of passage happen biologically. Like we physically go through the rite of passage. We have a bleed, which turns us into, you know, potential for making birth. Our birthing a baby is literally one of the biggest rites of passage into motherhood. So you can physically go through it. For men, however, it's an external rite that they need to have to mature into an adult male. And there are still tribes. I mean, we even have initiation rites still in South Africa. I know in, you know, Jewish traditions, there's also certain celebrations, but it's ultimately men are really desperate to understand what it means to be a man and how to be guided into that maturity. And of course, how that happens determines what they believe their value is. So if it's like, you know, receiving money at a fest, at a like celebration, because now you're a man, you can make money. Like if that's the extent to which we're celebrating manhood, then of course, there's also a deep wound within men that only thinks they're valuable if they make a certain amount of money or succeed in this system that's deeply damaging to like the true masculine that actually is here to protect and care for nature and women and children. We have to start thinking of what are our new rites of passage, because speaking to my friend last night, whose son is, you know, turning 18, and she's so desperately, she's from Rwanda. He lives in Europe now. He's very westernized. She's lost touch with her own rootings. We don't have a template anymore. So we have to build one because we can't go back to matriarchal tribes. Those days are over. We are embedded in a patriarchy and we need to kind of find a synergy of the two that speaks to the kind of multicultural mix up of where we live and how we live.
And how do you do that? It's like, how do you, I keep thinking this, it's like, I keep thinking about it. I keep thinking about it, like, because I am 36 and thinking about like, oh, you know, potentially having a family or whatever. I still am like, yes, there is a yearning to be a mother to a certain degree. I don't think I've had the full, like, I am ready to birth a child yet, but I cannot cope with having a child in the way that the world currently does it. Like, I just can't. Like, my whole body is in rejection to that system of, like, everything being really, and even the birthing process of everything being really hospitalized, like, having all these checks all the time. Like, I was talking to a friend about it the other day who actually had a home birth in the UK. And she was my housemate during COVID. So when I was doing my breathwork training and was, like, roaring and doing all my stuff in breath, she was aware of that process. And she was like, Lucy, there's no way in hell you can give birth in a hospital, because she was like, I gave birth at home and I was like pretty feral. But she was like, knowing how feral you get in breath work, like, I would love to see what would happen if you were giving birth. And I was thinking about it. I was like, I mean, I think that is the natural way that women are meant to be giving birth. But there is a part of it that's like moving into our wild nature and moving into the expression of like the feral inside of us. How the hell are you meant to do that when you're in a ward or like in a hospital room attached to loads of machines?
Yeah, with bright lights on you and random people like shoving speculars inside of your vagina while you're trying to relax. It's so anti-birth, the hospital. And unfortunately, it's again another crisis because there is such a level of mistrust and fear in our own bodies. And we often just hear the bad stories of home births when really, truly, you know, seeing also as a doula and being immersed in it to help heal my own wound of being a C-section baby, I recognize that the more we kind of soften into our bodies and soften into this deeper knowing, birth is like anything. It's the most pure and organic and simple thing you can do. And yes, it's primal. And yes, you will scream. And yes, there's an initiation into realizing just how capable I think you are as a woman. And that's why I feel so strongly about it, because it is such an opportunity for a woman to go, holy fuck, look what I can do. And if that moment gets robbed by some interference or some doctor or some husband or some mother, you know, that takes away that moment of you trusting yourself, it's just heartbreaking, because it really is such an incredible moment that every mother should have dignity and be protected from being taken away from them.
Are you open to talking about the C-section piece?
Oh, yeah. yeah, so South Africa, we have a really high rate of scheduled C-sections. So it's not emergency C-sections. It's just women who are advised oftentimes that their baby's too big or it's safer for them to just, you know, choose a date, come on in, get cut open. Mm. No problems. And ultimately, a lot of women choose it because that's what their gynees advise. And their gynees advise it because they can do much more births in shorter periods of time, because obviously labor takes time. And again, it's like the same thing I spoke about, these genetically modified vegetables. It's like we're just kind of in this machine of doing things efficiently, and it looks kind of clean and sterile and safe. But there's absolutely no deeper, true connection. You're literally cutting a child out of a woman for no reason other than to save time and create safety. But it creates such a level of unsafety, because you're robbing that opportunity for a child to also birth themselves. And so these babies come out into the world like stark, in trauma, in terror, pulled out really quickly in bright lights. And that impacts the nervous system. That is your first experience of life. And I know for myself, I've had to watch how I move into the world so quickly, so starkly, and harm my own being because of this programming of being pulled out too soon. And I don't want to shame any mothers who've done this. I know that there are emergency C-sections that do need to be done. However, right now we're in a real crisis where it's becoming the norm instead of something that should only ever be done for an emergency. And again, the ultimate thing that I see is this, it's a disassociated experience of birth. You're literally numb. You don't have any connection to what's happening. And that's how we're living. We're living from the head up. And it impacts. It impacts many layers for the child and the mother, which can, of course, be repaired. I mean, I know for my mum, she would say things like, I don't have a maternal bone in my body. And we felt it as kids, this kind of aching to be closer to her in some way. And it's tough because, of course, my mom, I mean, even speaking about this, like, I feel for her because there's a lot of shame around birth. So I never want to blame the mother. I see her as really a victim to the system and to my dad, who was a doctor, who also believed truly that this was the best thing to do at the time. And so, yeah, it's just a matter of, for me, I had to reprogram and see births naturally to start to believe that I can do it, because I really felt like this is impossible. Like, something deep in my body was just like, you know, birth is not natural. It's something that you just can get done out there at a hospital.
I feel like we forget as well, like, the, and this obviously doesn't only happen with C-sections, it happens also with vaginal birth as well, but like the real impact of how we come into the world. And I often work with clients, and at some point in with certain clients, I'll ask them if they know anything about their birth, because we think that it's like, oh, but that was before, I don't remember that, so like it didn't have an impact on me at all. It's like, no, the body memory is still there. And like, regardless of how you're born, it is traumatic. I mean, being squeezed through a very tight canal is also to a certain degree traumatic. But like, it comes back to that piece of honoring that process and honoring, like, I remember my sister talking to me about it because she got really interested in birth. She has three little boys and like natural birth, and even things like cutting the umbilical cord really early, or like not allowing a woman, obviously this isn't always possible depending on what happens with the birth, not allowing a woman to hold the baby for long enough. And like, I was doing EMDR recently on an experience that I had around birth, and the whole process was around me reprogramming my body to believe that I was held through something, but that is so often taken away. And I do think it is slightly better in the UK. From what I understand, the UK is like slightly more open to natural birth, and there's a lot more home birthing. But in South Africa, it does feel like it's moved into more of almost like the US process of medicalizing at all.
Yeah, it does. It's really bad here, and it for sure has a massive impact, because as you say, that first experience where you are so vulnerable, your need for skin to skin contact is so vital, and to now like go and take you to a machine and weigh you and do all these little things, that can be done in time, but if we could just preserve that holy moment when the soul is really just coming into the world, and let that be gentle and kind and slow, think about how that nervous system will then operate in the world. And I really see it. Like, birth is the blueprint for how the world works. And of course, we're doing these rushed, traumatic, like, highly over medicalized and interfered with. There's so many people interfering with you. So of course, then you always, as a child or even a mother, looking outside for someone to tell you what to do, because you've had all this external interference instead of this sacred moment of you and baby, you know, coming in.
And it's also, it's like simultaneously impossible to expect a woman to be able to have that level of sovereignty in a system that doesn't encourage that sovereignty. So like when we're brought up without the right of passage into womanhood, and we outsource power to governments, healthcares, whoever will take power from us, like, to then suddenly go into a birthing experience and be like, I am totally connected with my body and I'm sovereign and I trust myself. Like, God, I mean, I often think about it for myself, that I sit here like holier than thou, like, oh, if I ever have a baby, I'll do it all naturally and it'll be wonderful. Maybe, but maybe, I mean, I also hold a lot of fear. Maybe I'll be like, fuck, give me the epidural. Like, I want to see, like, I have no idea. But that process of like disconnecting from what our body actually wants and needs, like, that's been going on for so long.
Yeah, that's why the rites of passage have to start with the young girls at bleed. And I see that. And that's why, to really put a caveat here, there is absolutely no blame. Like it is, it's been conditioned into us to not trust ourselves. Yeah. So of course, when I get moms now feeling like it doesn't feel safe for me to birth at home, that makes complete sense. Like it actually feels safer for you to be in a hospital, then you have to go to a hospital. You have to be real with where you're at. It's just interesting to me to look at it from the root and to start with the young girls so that this doesn't have to feel like such a far away possibility.
When I did my, I will go on to talking about men, because when you're talking about trusting yourself, I was like, okay, this is definitely a, we can't have this conversation without talking to a certain degree about relationships. But before we go on to that, the piece about young girls, when I was on the Layla Martin retreat last year, there was a woman who was there who'd gone through so much trauma when she was younger, and she has a young girl, and she was talking about this nightly ritual that she does with her little girl before she goes to bed. And they sit down together and she's had a bath, blah, blah, blah. And then her mum asks her, I can't remember what word she uses, like whether she uses pussy or if she uses something else, I have no idea. But she asks her what that part of her body wants. Like whether it wants a bath, whether it wants to read, whether it wants like a foot massage. And I was like, that, like, and I recognize that for some people listening to this, they'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's weird. But like actually being it, like teaching a young girl, like not in a sexual way, not in an erotic way, to be in connection with that part of your body completely changes the game. Because how many of us have grown up without that disconnection and then ended up in sexual situations with people with no idea that our body is being like, no, 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 and just being like, okay, fine, go ahead with it, because we have no connection.
Yeah, it's so true. No, like it is real being connected to your vagina, which is ultimately your pleasure. And it, as she's, as this mother so rightfully is guiding, that pleasure could be a foot massage. It could be having that little bit of cake. It can be nourishing, slowing down, choosing to rest. It is a, it's a guiding post for us, but we like wax it, strip it, shove tampons up it, like let men fucking do things to it. And of course it's like numbed out and we can't listen, because it's also painful to really go in and connect to that part.
And it's so, like, I know that we've both been on this journey to a certain degree, because we've talked about it a lot over the last few years with relational pieces. I went through a deeply, I'm not going to say it was traumatic, deeply confronting experience when I got into a relationship of recognizing the depth of my dissociation from my body. And I had thought of myself as someone that was like quite sexually liberated and like free, and I didn't have any shame, and I was like, it was all great and blah, blah, blah. Then I realized that I was, in every sexual dynamic I'd ever had, it was all coming from my mind. It was all coming from some like slight level of turn on around the emotional unavailability of the other person and how I could never quite get them. And if I could act this like sexual being, then I'd finally win the prize. And actually being in, like when I started to do the sexuality work last year and being really in a relationship with what was going on in my body, I'm not kidding, for like 6 months, my body was just saying no. Over and over again. I was just like, no, 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 do not want anything. And I was so confused about what it was about. I was like, I have been completely dissociated from any of this, because I had no, I'm still, I mean, it's a work in progress, but like just totally dissociated from my vulva. Like no idea at all. And it's funny because that can often sound really esoteric if you're, I imagine that some people listening might be like, what the hell are you talking about? But if you're, if someone like hits you in the head and like someone's coming to you and punching you in the head, you'll probably be like, I don't want that. I'm going to move my head out of the way. Or like, no, you protect yourself because you're in relationship with the sensation in your head. With a vulva, we're just like, don't know, just shove anything up there. Like, it's madness.
It's total madness, and I so hear you. And for me, it's like even another layer recently doing vulva mapping with other women and realizing how much time we actually need to turn ourselves on as women and to truly be ready for penetration, and like how little we know about our own anatomy. And like the mons pubis, for example, which is like the mound on top, which we all wax and shave, this like squishy part that takes all the fucking impact in sex, and how even just massaging that area, which carries so much tension, is the part of the vagina that then feeds the tissues its juices and its liquidity and its nourishment. And, you know, how many of us are tending to our mons pubis? We're just like grabbing vibrators and trying to get to this like peak orgasmic state and wondering why later, you know, pleasure, you know, we just don't feel like it. Because as you say, the vagina's like, fuck you. I'm actually on like a total break right now from you not listening to me. And it takes work, because I know for myself, when I start to work slowly with my vagina and I do my practices not from a place of trying to reach a goal, what's actually sitting in there is a ton of grief and a ton of discomfort. And it's actually not very pleasurable. No. And it's like anger, it's grief, it's shame. It's like a lot of mucky stuff. That's just like, please, can I just be here first? Mm. And then of course, you know, it moves in waves, as we know. I just think it's important that we acknowledge, yeah, our poor pussies.
I know.
Under them.
Yeah. I do wonder whether some people manage to get into adulthood without having done any of this stuff. But for those of us who have a tendency towards unavailable, semi-toxic men that we like to chase, I think our poor bodies have gone through a lot.
Yeah, you know, mine was around submission, because my kind of grooming was around being available. So I was turned on by things that were actually harmful. And this is a whole topic.
Yeah.
Because I'm genuinely curious about kink, and I had my time there, and now I'm looking at the world really concerned with the state of our sexual society. I don't know what the answer is. I just know that like this horrible thing came up about this woman who had sex with 1,000 men and was marketed about it. And I literally live under a rock, because I didn't know that this was even a thing. And it does scare me. I think there is a very distorted and corrupt sort of sexual thing going on in the world. And so it is vital that we make spaces to have embodied erotic experience of what true pleasure is, and not this, again, like mind control that's pulling us out of our bodies and into some really dangerous and warped territory.
And how, as someone who has like been on a real journey of moving from head into body, and like I feel like you, out of everyone that I know, like so deeply devoted to body and tending to your body and being in your body, what does that journey feel like? And how does it feel to be in trust and like communion with your body?
So it's definitely a daily moment-to-moment practice, because there are times when I recognize I'm not there. What I have found is no rushing. Like that's really something I'm trying to, or not trying, that I am committing to. It's slowing down. That's the greatest way to start entering the body. And I have practices. I also recognize that I am a person of intensity, so things like free diving, which will push me to the edge of my own breath hold and experiencing all those sensations, also gives me a level of embodiment that I appreciate. Same with boxing and like weight training. I like to physically exert myself so that I can feel my muscles, that I can feel the strain of my breath. Like those are things that actually help me to get into my body. So being very physically active, as I said, slowing down, hot baths. I have a practice where I look in the mirror and I like speak to myself as I put oil on my body and on my face. And I'm constantly in communication. Like I'm rubbing my boobs all day today because I can feel I'm coming into ovulation. I hum constantly because I'm soothing my nervous system. Like people find it hilarious, but wherever I go, I'm humming. I'm humming, I'm awing, I'm sounding to the life that's around me, which again is like a physical experience of bringing sensation to my aliveness, to my reality. So yeah, it's looking at how your senses can support you in being physically alive.
And if you could, if there was like a woman that was listening that was deeply in a space of feeling like, oh my, I think I'm probably entirely in my head and completely disconnected, what is the one thing you tell them to do?
Take your shoes off and go and stick your feet in soil and ask the mother to draw you down. Like this is something I literally did intuitively at 22 years old in London, so fucking disassociated from way too much ketamine and cocaine. And I actually stopped wearing shoes for about 6 months. I would walk with these little like jewelry, like foot jewelry. So it looked like I was wearing shoes, but I realized I needed to feel the ground under my feet, even if that ground was like piercing hot or rubble. But getting your feet on the ground will bring attention and awareness into your feet, which will draw your energy from your head. And the earth is a living being. So when you are in living soil, you can actually ask for that support. And I often speak to the earth and I'm like, clear this shit off me, or help me to process this anger, you know, sticking my hands into the soil or going into the ocean. Like immersing yourself in raw nature is the greatest way to come back into your body, for sure.
I 100% agree. It's so funny because I was doing a lot of like embodiment work before I came to Cape Town. I was like doing breath and like movement and blah, blah, blah. And then coming to Cape Town and being in a city which is so deeply connected to nature and like really like the elements to a degree that I have never found anywhere else in the world. And recognizing like that is what actually brings you into like true connection with yourself and into true connection with your body is like being in the wild and remembering that you're like, I find it comical when I talk about this. I'm like, I was the banker that was sitting in the fourth floor of a tower in Canary Wharf, but like really being in the wild for me was like this, it was like a remembrance of like, oh my God, I'm a wild animal and I've been caged.
Yes.
Yeah.
You totally are.
Final question before we close. If, change of question, what does living a liberated life mean to you? As I actually look at you like as the queen of liberation in all honesty. I'm really intrigued to see this answer. And that's the woman that you'll find like crawling around in the sand, naked, picking weeds and eating them while simultaneously being like this incredibly beautiful, statuesque woman that would fit in like the most bougie bar in London. It's wild.
Yeah, it's funny. My sister made me a beaded choker that says liberator. Yeah, liberation, you know, for me, it's waking up each day and fucking having the full availability to do what it is that I love, whether it is being a feral witch and picking weeds, or, you know, I just booked a job with our friend doing a commercial and getting dressed up and, you know, making money by being an actor, or screaming at the top of my lungs to like naked women at a festival, or making love loudly. Like it's being able to have a range of experience with with no shame, even going into a cocoon for 3 months and hiding and working on my roots and feeling fulfilled. It's like, it's freedom and growth and choice, ultimately, like being led from the truth of my heart and my womb and my pussy each day to guide me.
I love that. And if the lovely listeners would like to find you, where can they find you? Even if you're in your cocoon, where will they be able to find you?
And become wild with us. Yeah, you can find me probably on Instagram and my Substack. I am committed to writing monthly essays there. And I'm committed to doing more in-person work. So I would say get your ass to South Africa and do a retreat with me when they decide to come out, probably through Instagram or my newsletter.
Substack is such a salve to the heart. So I highly encourage you all to go and subscribe to it. Every time I receive it, I devour it with a cup of tea. So thank you. Thank you, my darling woman, for being here. It's been such a joy to have you.
Yeah, thank you. Such a pleasure.